We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
To be honest, I would put myself in the same category as D-Wade.
Now Artest has jumped over the scorer's table. Artest is in the stands.
This man was a bona fide scrub. He can't play.
When I go to the writers to tell me who can guard in this league, I'll put a gun to my own head.
Welcome to the Monday, November 12th edition of the RotoWire NBA podcast, sponsored by DraftKings. My name, of course, is Joe Bartle. Alongside me today is Alex Google Me Barutha. Papa Barutha is going to be in the Madison, well, not office, but I should say in the Madison vicinity in the next 45 minutes or so. So if this feels a bit rushed, it's because we don't want to upset Papa Barutha.
You don't want to do that.
You don't want to do that. Well, we do have the privilege of getting to discuss really, the biggest news I think that we're going to see for quite a while in the NBA, and that was Jimmy Butler being traded. That was announced as I was doing the NFL wire, believe it or not, on Saturday, well, afternoon, that the 76ers had acquired Jimmy Butler for really what was Saric, Covington, and some bit pieces on both sides of things. It's fair to say that the 76ers have gotten better with this trade. I don't think there's any argument out there that they've gotten worse. They've lost a little bit of depth, but certainly adding a player of Jimmy Butler's caliber is going to make you better. And there was also rumors already starting that he was set to re-sign with the 76ers when his contract is up. So that kind of information all ties into what I think is the bigger question first, and I'll pose it to you, Alex. Did the 76ers get the better end of this trade, or was it the Timberwolves?
I think that's a tough question to answer. This essentially signals the death of the process in Philadelphia. And by trading Saric and Covington, who are like key role players, you've essentially you don't have to sign Jimmy Butler to a max deal after this. Maybe you can get him at a discount, but you've kind of locked yourself into this Jimmy Butler, Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid core, which I think Butler's a fine player to have next to those guys. Like, he's a secondary ball handler that can shoot next to Simmons. But I also, I'm a huge fan of Covington and Saric. I think they'll play really well in Minnesota. Minnesota can, I mean, It's kind of up to Tom Thibodeau at this point, who I think is falling out of favor with a lot of people. But
you think?
Yeah, right. They can run a very – I mean, they can run a five-out offense. I mean, you have Towns, Saric, Covington spacing the floor. Wiggins is kind of a question mark, but, you know, theoretically. And Teague there. I like the trade for both parties. I think Minnesota did the right thing. I think Philly – they didn't want to miss out on the possibility of not signing a free agent this summer after they kind of missed out on LeBron. They missed out on Paul George, Kawhi Leonard. So they've got something locked up, and that's good. I know I've kind of avoided answering your initial question, but...
Well, no, I think it's there's a lot of different conversations to come from this trade, and I think we're going to see it kind of play out in the ensuing months and weeks of the NBA season, where it's tough to grade it right now initially. I agree with you. I think Saric and Covington are actually pretty good pieces. And we were kind of talking off air. I'll present the question to you now, though. Is this the best deal that the Wolves we had heard about Josh Richardson from the Heat, and what sounded like a couple first-round picks, or at least a first-round pick, and that deal was nixed at the very last second by one side or the other a couple weeks ago, or kind of the start of the NBA season. I actually think the Wolves did better by getting Saric and Covington than what Josh Richardson and the Heat first-round picks would have been able to give you in a deal that kind of happened a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, that's not an easy question. I think I would have preferred Josh Richardson. I think he's just an extremely dynamic player. Like he can play off ball. He can spread the floor. He's a solid defender. He can dribble. I mean, he's turning himself into a legitimate, like, I don't want to say a star, but he's a 100% a starter in the NBA. And can play 35 minutes a night. He's constantly proving to play 35 minutes a night. He can handle primary ball handling responsibilities. Like when Dragic is out, Josh Richardson's the point guard. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, Saric and Covington they're specialists. And Covington more than Saric. Covington's an elite three-point shooter, an elite defender. And Saric gives you, he's not as much of a specialist, but he's dynamic off the bench. He can pass. He can do some rebounding. He hasn't been shooting that well this year. I assume that'll increase. I don't think either one of the deals is significantly better than the other, but I think if you would have made me pick one, I would have taken Josh Richardson.
I guess. Okay, so I'll pose the question to you in a different way. On a championship-winning roster, where does Josh Richardson fit? Like, is he the third best player, the second best player on a championship winning roster?
Probably the fourth.
Okay.
Third or fourth.
What about Saric and Covington? Same question.
I put them fourth and fifth.
So on a championship winning roster, in your opinion, Saric and Covington could be the fourth or fifth best player on the team.
Yeah.
And Richardson could be the fourth or fifth best player on the team.
I would put fourth or third for Richardson.
So in that sense, then the Wolves acquired two players that, again, they're far away from being a championship roster. I understand that. But
right.
They acquired two players that are only slightly worse, in your opinion,
sure,
than Josh Richardson. How is that not a better deal for them then?
My thought is that it would be harder for you to sign that third player in free agency or acquire him somehow, rather than getting theoretically someone who could be your third best player in a trade and then trying to sign a fourth and fifth best guy.
Okay. So it's easier to acquire a fourth or fifth best guy as opposed to the third best guy.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And that's a certainly an interesting conversation point too that we could be having. I agree that I think Josh Richardson is the better player. I feel like Miami, other than the weather, there's something in the water down there where the reclamation projects for a lot of those guys are incredible. And I think that has to go a little bit something to Spoelstra. I think the coaching staff and maybe even Pat Riley plays a bit of a part into that. If Josh Richardson was to be on the Kings, for example, I don't think he'd be doing as well as what we're seeing currently. And that shouldn't be – I really get frustrated when we see this in the NFL, when the coaching staff takes away from what a player is capable of doing. You see it all the time with Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, yada, yada, yada. I get upset because that's not how we're supposed to be viewing it. But when it comes down to, okay, what did they acquire for Jimmy Butler, who is a top 15, top 20 player in the NBA, I still think they ended up doing better than what was just essentially a Josh Richardson type deal from the Heat.
Yeah, and I mean, it's Josh Richardson. This is, I mean, 100% a huge breakout year for him. I mean, he was the 40th overall pick in 2015. Essentially spent the first 2 years of his career kind of like trying to find his role, and he was injured. He played a combined 105 games his first 2 years. last year they gave him a real like starting role and you could tell like he was going to be a good player. But I mean, this year he's averaging 21 points a game, 4 rebounds, 3.5 assists, a combined 2 steals and blocks, and he's shooting 42% from three. I mean, this is a huge, I mean, this, there really are not a lot of players in the league that can do that at all. And this has been 12 games. It could decrease, sure. But he shot 45% last year, 38% from three. It's, yeah, it's, that's a tough question because we're talking about, you know, do you want the, would you rather have two, would you rather have an elite role player at a great price like Covington and the guy who could like, you know, a guy like Saric who still has some upside, he's a big who can shoot, or do you want, you know, Josh Richardson who it, you would have to go out and find the depth. Like you have to go find those elite role players and you might have to end up overpaying for those guys.
Right.
We've seen so many teams overpay for role players that the fact that you can get Covington and Saric, especially Covington on the deal that he's on, is just valuable in and of itself. And who knows what you might have had to pay Josh Richardson if he keeps playing like this.
I mean, his contract, he still has 2 or 3 years, but that's an interesting point. I think Covington probably is overpaid for what he'd be asked to do on a championship winning roster as well. Like he's an expensive role player and one that isn't all that great at defense. Like I think he's a little bit overrated in terms of his defense abilities, but certainly his 3-point shooting is an asset that I think is well worth acquiring. I'm gonna give you one more question based off of this because again, I think it's a very interesting story, and we're not gonna get much better ones throughout the next couple weeks or so of the NBA season.
Sure.
What is the biggest weakness of the 76ers currently? As it is, without Jimmy Butler, what was the biggest weakness of this team in your opinion?
For them, it's mostly spacing.
Okay.
They just don't have 3-point shooters.
I agree.
Enough 3-point shooters.
And then what did they just do?
They triggered their 3-point shooters.
So I don't understand it. Like, so I get it. I get acquiring another starter. And you, I walked you into this. You had no idea that I was going to pose that question. But yeah, that's what I think a lot of people would be saying the 76ers' main struggle is that, hey, they don't have a lot of spacing. Ben Simmons hasn't developed an outside game yet. He will. He hasn't yet. And Fultz, of course, we all know what his struggles are from really beyond the free throw line, much less the 3-point line. I understand they're young players, but to give away two of really your only valuable 3-point shooters, they have J.J. Redick, and then that's it. Jimmy Butler isn't known for his 3-point shooting. He can space it, of course,
right,
because he's an elite player, but that's not what he's known for. To me, it's not as great of a deal as I think a lot of people are anticipating. The 76ers are going to do good because they're in the East, and there are the Raptors, and there are the Bucks, and there are the Celtics. And those are the three teams that really are any concern to that team whatsoever, the Philadelphia. I don't think they're better than the Raptors as currently constructed with Butler. I don't think they're better than the Celtics. You can make a case they're not better than the Bucks too. And I think we both have biases to the point where I'm going to avoid that entirely.
Right. But
I just don't. If you're going to have to pay him $200 million for a guy that's going to be 30 years old and isn't going to really provide any answers to what is going to be one of the most difficult parts of building a team with Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, that being lack of 3-point shooting.
Right, and that makes me feel like this move is more about next year and beyond. Like, I think this year they're just going to have to – they could maybe, make some trades for floor spacing. They could maybe explore the buyout market. Like, last year they got Bellinelli and Ersan, but how many times are you going to be able to sign two guys like that? And they both overperform by, like, 10 to 15% of what's expected.
Right.
And there's a ton of other teams in the race for guys like that. Now, I mean, Los Angeles is going to be extremely – I mean, they're going to be in that Milwaukee could even be in that. You got other teams in the West. I mean, Houston all we know, and we'll get there. But like, yeah, I mean, to me, this move for this year, I mean, it gives them like tangible upside because now you have Jimmy Butler. But I think there's clearly still work to be done with the roster that may not be able to be accomplished until next year or the year after. So I think this move, and that's why I kind of called it like the death of the process. It's just like you sign this guy and you're kind of in win now mode, but you may not even win this year.
Right.
You're kind of winning next year still. And by that time, Jimmy Butler's 30, 31. You might have to sign him to a $100 million deal. I mean, maybe hopefully he would take a discount.
I don't know though.
Because you're going to be insanely capped out.
Right.
Like you signed Jimmy Butler, then you already got Embiid's extension done and he's at a relative discount. You know,
to what he could be as a
player. And
I agree with you. Yep.
They have injury clauses in there, but you're going to have to max out Ben Simmons. So you don't have a lot of room. Like, this is your core if you max out Jimmy Butler.
Right.
And then you got to spend the next year or two figuring out who plays well around Jimmy Butler. Can Markelle Fultz even function on this team? Stuff like that.
It makes a lot of sense. I understand. Acquiring a star, anytime you acquire a star in the NBA, you're probably getting the better end of the deal. But it's just a really bizarre thing. For what I would have thought the Wolves would be losing leverage as the days and weeks go by, losing leverage as far as trading Jimmy Butler, to see them have to give up two, I think, very important pieces to if they were to win this year or next year in Covington and Saric, for a guy that doesn't immediately add a lot of versatility to an offense that needs that three-point shooting, whatever else, it's just difficult. You brought up the buyout market. I think a very obvious mercenary that I could see joining the 76ers is Kyle Korver. I mean,
yeah.
The Cavs really stink. He's had a couple stints on that 76ers team. He knows the area. Other than maybe joining the Lakers or joining the Bucks and Budenholzer again, because he was with the Hawks for
right.
a couple, really when he was best in his career, that one makes a lot of sense to me. I anticipate they'll add three-point shooting as the season progresses. I don't know. Yeah, I guess, you know, we've kind of beat this to the death, but I just think that it's a curious trade on both sides of things, and I don't think it's as obvious of a win for the 76ers as the media, and in particular really the East Coast media, has made it seem to be so far.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it.
Other news as far as, well, important players, but I don't even think that's the case really to say anymore. Carmelo Anthony, the players and coaches for the Houston Rockets believe Melo has played his last game with the organization. Who would have saw this coming, that a guy who can't play defense and really can't shoot, can't dribble in, and can't pass is somehow a negative asset for the team? This is stunning to me.
Yeah, I mean, this... I don't really... Where do you even start with this? I mean, I thought about, I think when I first like saw this headline, I thought about how there was some joking that Carmelo wanted like a novelty Atlanta Hawks Carmelo jersey, like because he was traded there, never played for a game, bought out. But now it's like the Houston Rockets jersey is also going to be a novelty because he spent 10 games there, started two games and shot 33% from 3-point line and got kicked out.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of a weird, sad ending to Carmelo's career. Like, I was never, even as someone, like, I was never this huge Carmelo fan. Like, he was fine. Like, he was a great player for many years. It's going to be weird, I think, once he's finally done or however this year ends, to, like, this past 2 years has really just tainted kind of his legacy to some extent. And it probably shouldn't. But...
Okay, but here's – so I am not a Carmelo Anthony fan. I really have never been. And I really don't like to do the, oh, what is he one thing? Like that argument really annoys me as well, because there's a lot of different facets to winning besides one player taking you there. What he's going to be known for is he was an excellent scorer.
Right.
And he won the Olympics. Like that's kind of what Carmelo Anthony's career is going to boil down to, a guy that probably underachieved in the postseason if he ever made it to the postseason often. You know, like that's just – he's going to be a Hall of Famer because his scoring was elite, and he's been elite at scoring for a long time. But the truth is that he hasn't been a great passer. He never really was a great defender, and he wasn't an excellent teammate in the NBA. The Olympics was really the only area where he was a good teammate, and it's weird to see that because you would think, hey, this is where he's going to make most of his money, make most of his, you know, resume, so to speak, in the NBA, and yet he's unable to do that, and we could see him do it in the Olympics. I don't know. It's a non-story to me, because anyone with two eyes could have saw last year Carmelo Anthony was going to struggle in any capacity where he was expected to play 25 to 35 minutes, and yet he still believes that he should be doing it. And that right there is the problem with Carmelo Anthony in today's NBA.
Right, and it was just he struggled on – I forgot the exact numbers. I tweeted it out at some point last year because he was complaining that he wasn't getting the shots that he wanted or the shots that – and it's like you can – NBA.com, you can expose any player with those stats. It's like he was shooting just not good at all and like wide open threes. Like it's like what other shot do you want? They're not wide open. If you can't hit wide open threes when that is theoretically what you're supposed to be good at,
right.
It's just you have no value. It's just – he's kind of, I think, the culmination of just this era of NBA players that I think history is kind of going to look back on and not be kind to because of what we know about analytics and efficiency and what kind of shots you should be taking. Like, it's going to be difficult for you to look at Carmelo Anthony's prime. Like he's a guy who, yeah, he averaged 25 points a game for, like, what, a decade?
Right.
But, you know, Like,
he's going to go down as one of the best isolation players in all of NBA, analytics or otherwise. I really believe that, like, when you give a ball to Carmelo Anthony, he's more than likely going to score. And that's something. That's Hall of Fame worthy to be considered among that. But when we're talking about career, teammate-wise, and everything else that goes along with it, there's a reason why his team's hardly ever won in the postseason or got to the postseason. Is because he didn't give me that he didn't have stuff around him either argument, because I don't care for that as well. I guess I just don't argue with me. That's kind of what we're going with right now. I don't know.
He shot 42% from the field in the playoffs, 31% from three in the playoffs, and it's not ideal. He had a 104 offensive rating, a 107 defensive rating. It's just, it's hard. It's really tough because we are talking about a Hall of Famer.
Certainly.
And, but there, I think it's just, if Carmelo Anthony would have, existed today, like if Carmelo Anthony, the prospect, would have gotten drafted today, it's like, how different would his career, would he have ever gotten 38 minutes? Would a team let him shoot 22 times?
I think he would have had to develop more defensive skills, and I think he would have had to develop as a passer. He got into the NBA at the perfect time for Carmelo Anthony that we know as right now, because he didn't have to be a 3-and-D guy, which he could be. I really believe with his height and athleticism in his prime, he could have been a 3-and-D guy, and he could have been a better passer, but he didn't want to. I just wasn't taught it, didn't learn it, whatever you want to say. That's not what he was going to be, and it became pretty apparent even during the end of his Nugget days that wasn't going to be what he could be as a player.
Yeah. Yeah,
there's no arguments. That's exactly it, Alex. There's no arguments to it. Well, try out Playline.com, the fastest growing sports gaming platform in the space, and a chance to win $1 million for free every day. There's over $1 billion in prizes available this year. Of course, it was founded by UFC champion Michael Bisping and two-time NBA All-Star Roy Hibbert. Playline.com is a fantasy sports simplified, and unlike more traditional daily fantasy sites, which require you to set a complicated and tedious lineup that Alex is going to break down for us in a little bit. Playline picks the players for you and only requires you to predict their stat lines. So something like, how many points will Giannis score? Or even how many rebounds will a player get? For a limited time, Playline.com will be offering a 200% initial deposit bonus. They'll triple your money. You really just can't beat that. So use promo code NBA Millionaire to kind of get in on the 200% initial deposit bonus. And yeah, Playline's been pretty good for us. I can't really complain about it so far.
It's a really fun way to do fantasy. Because you can. There's so many ways to look at it.
I like the neat angles that you can have as far as who's going to rebounds and points, and it is easier. Like, of course, their line says that because it is, but it really is a lot easier as opposed to kind of guessing. And that's really what we are doing for DraftKings or FanDuel. And those kind of guessing as to who could go off in a given night. It's a different kind of game, and I enjoy that about Playline.
Right. Yeah.
All right, well, there's 10 games for Monday's slate, and a variety of significant injuries, but of course, we already talked about Jimmy Butler. The trade really got consummated today. Mm-hmm. I know it was agreed upon Saturday, but just on logistics and league office stuff, the trade actually happened today.
Yeah, so apparently the league office doesn't operate on weekends.
I don't blame them from that perspective, because it's not fun to work on weekends. I get it. It is weird, though. It's a little bizarre. So, yeah, trade hasn't been consummated until today, so perfect. Jimmy Butler will be out. We don't really know about Covington or Saracek, but the expectation is that they aren't going to be playing either for the Wolves, right?
Yeah, I would guess not.
We haven't heard anything as of yet.
Which is weird, but they're fair plays if they play. Like, I can't tell you not to play them if they're available, because they're always fair options. Saric hasn't been playing. He hasn't been shooting that well, but he's a relatively high usage player, right, as far as he can handle the ball a lot. Covington is a guy you put in your lineup and like hope he hits six threes, like cross your fingers. High upside for steals, but yeah, my guess is they won't play.
Westbrook is out with an ankle injury, and Curry is out with a groin injury. Did you see the quote that he had following that groin injury? Is that, if I had an ankle injury, I know I'll be out 1 to 3 games. Or if I had the shoulder injury, which I think he had 2 years ago, yeah, I'm going to be out 2 weeks. I've never done this before, so I have no idea how long I'm going to be out. That's what he said with his groin. And that, there's an honesty to that I like about it, but it is a little bit concerning if you are a Steph Curry owner, whether it be, well, I guess not DFS, but more in the season-long angle. Yeah, a groin injury for a point guard that really thrives on getting space in minuscule ways probably needs to have a healthy lower torso to be able to work effectively.
Yeah, I mean, just your hips in general for explosiveness are like you need that a ton for basketball players. So, and yeah, when they did an MRI for Curry, they diagnosed it as a mild to moderate groin strain. So that leaves a wide window.
That's so much ambiguity.
That's like he can miss two games. He can miss a week and a half. So, I mean, I think the main takeaway from this is, you know, Quinn Cook is an option DFS, and Quinn Cook is someone you should probably be strongly considering picking up in your long leagues.
How about Elfrid Payton? He's doubtful along with Jeff Teague, two point guards, Payton with the ankle injury and then Teague with the knee injury. I mean, like if Teague's out and if Covington and Sarge are out, we're going pretty far down as far as past Wiggins, past Towns for a third scorer for the Wolves, and somebody has to score. Like Taj Gibson's not scoring, so somebody after those two has to. This is going to be interesting kind of see what happens if Teague is out.
Yeah, Wiggins is dealing with an injury of his own.
He is questionable
with a quad. So, I mean, he's theoretically the third guy. I mean, I'm Derrick Rose. At this point, you just have to say Derrick Rose is like playing well. He's just good now. And Towns is obvious, but I mean, they're going to pull Josh Okogie off the bench. They're going to pull maybe Bates Jop off the bench. Anthony Tolliver could get some run at the three. These are all flyer guys. They're going to save you some money in your lineups. So it's hard to say exactly which one is worth investing in at the price. But we've seen Josh Okogie. I think it's Okogie instead of Okogie. But he has played well in the past when he's gotten extended minutes. So he's probably your safest bet, but is going to cost you more than the likes of Anthony Tolliver and whoever else.
Let's just say I like a lot of the Nets in today's Monday slate. And of course, Karis LeVert is also a game time decision as well. So like the leading scorer for the Nets, I can't even be that super jazzed about. But when there's such lack of depth for that team, I have to imagine that the Nets and their plethora of scorers, particularly on DraftKings with the three-point bonus and defensive bonuses,
right,
would be interesting plays if nothing else.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Draymond Green also questionable with a toe injury. Aaron Gordon, another Magic player, questionable ankle. And then Mirotić ankles injury as well, questionable. This is 10 games, but we're now getting to the point of the season. We're middle of November, getting close to November. As we get towards Thanksgiving, we're going to start seeing more of these injuries crop up. And here's where you can get a lot of the value for the players. We've got to kind of figure it out. Is it close to 7 o'clock tip-off time? But
yeah,
we're going to see a bit more players get injured and kind of resting a little bit, especially for a team like the Magic, who by no means are competitive and might as well try out some of their young guys. They know what they have in Aaron Gordon. I don't know why they would throw him out there all the time unless they're really seeing how he fits with the rest of their hodgepodge squad, so to speak.
Yeah, you don't need to rush Aaron Gordon back or anything like that. But yeah, this is the point in the season where it's like, well, if you make your lineup at 10 a.m.
Right.
By the time, yeah, by the
back by two,
yeah,
it'll be completely different.
It's probably not going to be the same unless, I mean, you're playing some, you can get away with probably,
That's rough. Exactly why I will preface this conversation as we get closer to Alex's DFS lineup, that this is not formality. I mean, we are not setting these and locking these in for certain. It's more of just, hey, this player might be good based on their matchup. Hey, this player, even if he's available, I wouldn't want to play him kind of thing. This, you kind of got to play it by ear, and certainly as I get closer to the 7 o'clock Eastern time tip-off, RotoWire is going to have all those injury notes and analysis up there, and guys that could start or play 30 minutes, like the Wolves. we'll have more information and ideas on as it gets close to that point.
I just saw this just came through. Draymond Green is planning to play, so he should be considered probable.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he's planning. I don't know. I've seen so many different things. We've been doing this podcast now for 2 years at least on DFS angles, and there's been at least multiple occasions I can think of off the top of my head where it's like, oh, yeah, hey, Steph Curry says he's going to play. Nope, out. And, oh, yeah, Draymond Green, nope, out. Okay, because the Warriors don't have to do anything in the regular season. This is not the 82 games that are kind of just a formality for that team at this point, and especially with all those guys there. All right. Anyway, I'm rambling here. Anthony Davis is your highest priced player on Monday's slate, at least for DraftKings, at 11,600 against the Raptors. Kevin Durant, probably the guaranteed healthy member of the Warriors, is 11,000 against the Clippers. And Joel Embiid is your third highest priced player on DraftKings slate at 10,100 versus the Heat. The highest over-under for Monday's 10-game slate is going to be the Pelicans at Raptors, 231.5. I would imagine as we get more of the news in there that maybe that Wolves-Nets game gets to be higher, but I don't think it, do you think it crosses 231?
Probably not. There could be a lot. I mean, Pelicans and Raptors over under might be so high because it's a fast pace and these teams are good, so they're going to make shots.
Oh yeah, true. Yeah,
you get Nets. You get Nets Wolves with some players out. It could be a fast pace, but it might be a lot of bricks. So yeah,
that's true. The lowest over under is going to be Jazz at Grizzlies in 203. I would not be taking the over on that. Frankly, I understand how the NBA is now currently, but. Yeah, Jazz Grizzlies.
That's a fair over under. Yeah.
Yes, it is. Largest spread, of course, the Raptors over the Pelicans by 9, and then the smallest spread, Mavericks over the Bulls. Anything that you really pick out noteworthy from particular matchups, or would you rather kind of get into more of your DFS lineup?
I think we can just jump into the DFS lineup, discuss some stuff, because I think those games are kind of – I think those all speak for themselves. Like, Mavericks-Bulls is just chaos. Like, both these teams are bad, and they're, you know – Pelicans, Raptors, that might depend on. I mean, if Payton's probably out, it's a 9-point favor for the Raptors for a reason. They're an incredible team. You know, Mirotić has got an ankle thing. Right. It's, yeah.
Well, don't get overeager on talking about your DFS lineups and who's going to be playing, because we have partnered up with DraftKings to bring you a RotoWire 6-month membership for free. So here's how it works. Go to rotowire.com/DraftKings, sign up for a new account, and make a $10 deposit or more. That's right. You'll get 6 months access to all tools and sports on rotowire.com, which includes DFS lineup optimizers, weekly rankings, premium articles, full season draft software, defensive versus positioning tools, which I love quite a bit, and much more, all for $10, which you can then enter into contests to potentially win more. So we're super excited to bring you this deal, of course. And if you want access right away, go to rotowire.com/DraftKings and follow the instructions. Eligibility restrictions apply, and then new DraftKings users only. See DraftKings.com for details. All right. Before we get to your lineup,
sure,
let's kind of get that this guy or that guy situation going again, because I really do think this is an important thing. And last week we had talked about it was Chris Middleton or Caris LeVert, I think. And Caris LeVert was 7,200 and Middleton was 7,000. I argued Middleton was the right play. The answer was both. Both were the right play. They both had over 45 points. And frankly, that was the difference between, in my opinion, a winning lineup, at least on the double-up format, than maybe the tournament setting. So Drew Holiday against the Raptors or Kyle Lowry against the Pelicans. This is your 8,200 Holiday or 8,400 Lowry in a matchup that is going to be two point guards pit against one another.
Yeah, I think this is a really interesting choice. I'm going Lowry because New Orleans can't guard point guards. Absolutely garbage at defense first position. I forgot the exact numbers. If you read my FanDuel article that's up today, shameless plug, just Google me. This game has blowout risk, right? The Raptors could go up 15 and Lowry might play 25 minutes. We saw that happen last game. And at the same token, I feel like I say this every time now, the Pelicans really need a win. They're 6-6 right now. Like, they need to win. So Holiday might play 40 minutes, maybe more if they need him to. But ultimately, I'm going to go with Lowry. Just the high pace, the fact that New Orleans can't guard point guards. You know, Lowry could put up 60 fantasy points. It wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, and you had said earlier when we were talking about the highest over-unders, both teams are going to be making shots because they're actually okay teams. Like, this is a situation where they get to be 115, 110. You see, oh, wait, they've both shot almost 50% from the field. Like, this is
right.
That's how you get into that scenario. Up-paced tempo and two teams that know how to score the basket. Lowry, whether he's shooting or even assisting for that matter, is going to get his points on DraftKings. And I think I'm leaning that direction too. For just a $200 savings, I like that quite a bit. That makes a lot of sense to me. Paul George at 9,700 against the Suns or DeMar DeRozan at 9,300 against the Kings is a bit of a different conversation, though. Like, I think that's a very interesting forward matchup on DraftKings, and I don't know if I have a direction that I lean one way or the other, frankly.
I think I would go DeRozan because, I mean, for as bad as the Suns are, their best defense is on the wings. That's if they provide any defense anywhere on the court, which they really don't. If one part of their team's going to play well defensively, it's going to be their wings. They have Trevor Ariza. They have Josh Jackson. They have Mikal Bridges. Like, those guys, you know, I think have a better chance at stopping Paul George than anyone on the Kings does at stopping DeMar DeRozan. And so I think ultimately, you know, DeRozan's going to have the ball in his hands a lot. They both are. But if I was going to go anybody from this OKC Phoenix game, it'd probably be Dennis Schroeder.
Oh, okay. Especially with Westbrook out.
With Westbrook out, yeah, Dennis Schroeder. Right. Yeah, I mean, Phoenix gives up, yeah, I think they're top five in points allowed to point guards fantasy-wise. So I think if you're going to do anybody from this game, it would be Dennis Schroeder.
I know who I would take in this next, this guy or that guy, but I'm interested to hear your perspective. Alex Vucevic against the Wizards and Dwight Howard, or Hassan Whiteside at 8,200 against the 76ers. Vucevic is 8,500. Of course, the Magic stink and the 76ers don't. So I'm leaning towards Vucevic, but yeah. I'll kind of toss to you.
That's the way I'm going to. I would go Vucevic against Washington, especially if you consider, like, if Aaron Gordon's out. I don't really know what else they're going to do besides, you know, feed the ball to Vucevic and let that kind of do, just see whatever happens there. Whiteside against Philly, I think the Embiid-Whiteside matchup is going to be just fun to watch. But it's the question with Whiteside, not as much this year as last year, but is Whiteside going to play 30 to 35 minutes? This is the exact matchup where you need Whiteside, is against Joel Embiid. You need him out there. You need him to play defense. The question is he going to produce because he's being guarded by Joel Embiid, vice versa? So ultimately, I think Vucevic is just in an easier matchup and is a way better passer, can hit threes.
I'm sorry, cut you off there. That's fine. I could see Embiid after the game saying, "Oh, I have real estate in Whiteside's head too," and then this be a slogan that he runs with the rest of the year.
Like, right.
He'll be saying, "I've real estate in John Henson's head" by the end of the season too. Like, I sometimes Embiid, and I love this about players, that when they artificially make storylines that there's no reason to. Like, if we're talking who's the better player, Embiid or Drummond, it's very clearly Embiid in my opinion. I think the same could be said for Embiid versus Whiteside. But yet the simple fact that they play the same position and they are arguably close as far as skill and potential, I could see Embiid going off and just having a game on Whiteside. And I understand the point what you're making, that they need Whiteside to be in there, but Vucevic all the way for me. And really, the Wizards also allow the third most points to the center spot. I think that's an interesting facet as well. And maybe he, not that he attempts any threes, I don't know. Somebody has to score for the Magic. This is an NBA team. Somebody has to score. I imagine he's the probably main culprit if you're, you know, to guess who's going to be the highest scorer for the Magic in this game.
Yeah, it's either going to be Vucevic or Fournier, assuming Aaron Gordon's out. And if Aaron Gordon's out, like, play Fournier. Like, do it.
Yeah.
He might be pacing, he might be looking to career high in assists. I feel like every time I look at Fournier's DFS numbers, he's got more assists than I've ever seen him get before. Yeah, he's on a career high pace. He's got 4.4 assists per game right now, Fournier does. So they run more offense through him than they used to.
I should have a stat correction. I said third highest points for the center spot the Wizards have allowed. That's on FanDuel. DraftKings, they're about middle of the pack. But still, just I'm not deterred at all in any way based off the matchup. I think that he'll have his points throughout the game.
Yeah, I mean, the DraftKings one, I think, is going to factor in everybody who qualifies at center. So like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is going to be in there. It's not really the same. So I think in certain ways the FanDuel
is more accurate to the position.
Yeah, you can be picky and choosy and figure out something better.
Okay, well, that's fair. Before Papa Barutha comes in here and gets angry at me, I'll let you run through your DFS lineup and kind of just tell the people what you're looking at right now. Of course, again, we've highlighted this earlier in the podcast, but we are recording this at around 1 o'clock Central Time. As it gets closer to 7 o'clock Eastern time, we'll have more of an idea as to who's starting, who's sitting, and where the value is. You can Google Alex and figure out, based off his Twitter timeline or RotoWire's Twitter timeline, who's the best place to go with. But all that being prefaced ahead, I'll let you kind of give your say on your lineup so far.
Sure. So at point guard, I have Kyle Lowry, as previously discussed. Shooting guard, I'm looking to Lou Williams. I think most people would avoid playing a shooting guard against Golden State because of Klay Thompson, but the Warriors allow, I think, the second most fantasy points to shooting guards on the season, just really surprising. And Lou Williams has been playing really well as of late, looking more of like his sixth man self. His usage is up, his fantasy points are up. So you're getting him at 6,100, and you can at least lock in, it seems like, 25 fantasy points for him with an upside of 35, if not 40. I have Jay Crowder against Memphis. This is a slow-paced matchup, but Memphis, I think is top five in the league, fantasy points allowed to small forwards. And I was surprised to see that Crowder actually plays more small forward than he does power forward. I would expect him to play more power forward. That's not the case. He's been playing really well, very much under the radar this year. I feel like no one's talking about Jay Crowder having kind of a resurgent fantasy season. He's playing, I think he's arguably just as good or better of a fantasy asset now that he was during his last year in Boston. I have Pascal Siakam at power forward at 5,900 against New Orleans. New Orleans can't guard power forwards.
Especially with Mirotić out, too.
Especially, if Mirotić is playing on a bum ankle or he's just out entirely, I think this is a good opportunity for Siakam, especially since guys like Valanciunas and Ibaka are probably just going to be smothered by Anthony Davis the entire game. So they might not really be getting as many rebounds as you would think. I have Karl Anthony Towns at 8,900 against Brooklyn. I think that kind of speaks for itself. Butler's out of town. The Nets are just as bad this year as they were last year at guarding centers. At guard, I have TJ McConnell at 3,800 against Miami. The 76ers still have like nine available players. TJ McConnell, I think 30-ish fantasy points during their previous game. He could go 10 times value. He's done it before. Montrezl Harrell at 5,600 against Golden State. I think Harrell makes sense as a center against Golden State. He's been playing a lot lately. Gortat's essentially out of the rotation. And so you are getting a guy at 5,600 who at this point seems like he has a 20 fantasy point floor, could easily get you 30, 35 fantasy points. And we saw how Giannis abused the Warriors inside, and Montrezl Harrell is a high efficiency inside player, so he kind of fits that mold. Draymond back would complicate things, but I still like it regardless. Finally, Jabari Parker as utility at 5,800. I usually don't play Jabari Parker that much in fantasy, but he fit in my lineup monetarily. I looked at the other options for around the same price. Dallas is not good. Seems like a matchup that Parker could, you know, if 30 points, 8 rebounds wouldn't surprise me. They just don't. Dallas can't guard anybody. So I think he's a fair option there. Definitely would be open to other options. Jabari Parker is the farthest thing from a lock in my lineup.
So that utility spot is going to be used wisely in Alex's lineup so far. Kyle Lowry at 8,400 against the Pelicans. Lou Williams, 6,100 against the Warriors. Crowder, 5,200 against the Grizzlies. I'm going to correct you that they allow actually mid-tier points on DraftKings, the small forward spot. But FanDuel might say otherwise, which is, again, I lean towards what you were saying in the center spot that, there's some differences that can be made for who plays small forward and where they're listed on DraftKings. Siakam at 5,900 against the Pelicans. Karl Anthony Towns, 8,900 against the Nets. TJ McConnell, 3,800, good for 10 times the value, according to Alex, against the Heat.
Lock it in 10 times value.
5,600 against the Warriors at the forward spot and utility. Not really utility, probably going to be somewhere else. Jabari Parker, 5,800 against the I can't play anything at all Mavericks is Alex's lineup for right now. I think that does it really for us on the Monday NBA podcast. Hopefully there'll be another interesting trade to discuss next week, but if there's not, you can always Google Alex Barutha and find out his Twitter account and let him know how you really feel about that trade overall.